Who's that?
Yeah.
Okay, now I'm here. Okay. Okay. You're about to embark upon a brand new sugya. We just, last 2 minutes of the last year, we began to do this sugya. Let's take a look at it and say, so in the first half of Chumos, the Gemara is going back to the fundamental question, how to reach out that Mishnah. Mark quoted two different possibilities. What exactly got this wall up in the first place? Why are we building this wall? So according to one opinion, because two parties agree, build the wall, that's it. If not for their consent, there would have been no obligation. I cannot force you to build a wall because, according to one opinion of the Gemara, Hezek is Lav Shmei Hezek. According to the other opinion of the Gemara, Hezek is Ishmei Hezek. And therefore, once the courtyard is divided, then automatically the Chiyuv of the Kosel kicks in. The problem is, what got that division of the courtyard started in the first place? That's what the Gemara begins with, the first of the Rambam Kamos. B'mayo Kimsel Mastisim. You just established the Mishnah to be referring to B'she'ein Badin Chalukah. It's a type of a courtyard that one partner does not have the other, does not have the right to force the other partner to divide. Here, we're making reference to Mishnayos later on, the first barak, that whenever you have ownership of something in partnership, so it gets a little bit tricky. If, let's say, the two of us own a tremendous, tremendous field, and then I have a right to tell you at some point, I'd like to pull out of the partnership. So I'm going to take half the field, and you're going to take half the field, sure. But what if we have a very, very small area together? It's called Ein Badin Chalukah. It's not really usable. What am I going to do with the 2 feet? How many crops am I going to plant in 2 feet of land? So there, the Mishnah, the Gemara tells us later on, the first part of the Basra, I can't force you to divide it up because it's not really usable. If you choose to divide it up, and I choose to divide it up, someday two partners will do whatever they want, and no one's going to stop them. So this Mishnah is referring to a situation where it's Ein Badin Chalukah. It's a small chatzer. And the only thing that got them to have to divide it up is their consent. So we ask them, wait a second. Din chalukah, ki ratzu b'hafi. So what, they consented? So last week they decided they're going to divide up the courtyard. And now the other fellows are, I don't want him anymore. Once he hears that dividing up this chutz is going to cost them a pretty penny to build a wall, he's like, wait a second, blah, blah, blah. I agree with that. I'm not interested in that. So let him just back out. Mahadrabu, let him back out. He gave his word. A word is very important in Midvash HaKetirchak, but in terms of the Demogonis, it doesn't mean all that much. So unless there was some kind of a real bona fide halachic obligation to go through with that word, easy come, easy go. So he answers the Gemara, Amar B'Yasim Rabbi Yechanan, Shekonomi Yadon. It must be that the Mishnah is referring to an agreement that wasn't simply words. It was an agreement that was supported with the Maisik Kinyan. They took out that famous handkerchief, I make a Kinyan, and I'm hereby acquiring from you the obligation. You're obligating yourself to divide up this chatzer. And vice versa. The other fellow gives me a handkerchief, and now there's teeth to it. Now there's a kidney to it. Now that's the real thing. Now the Mishnah can begin to be understood. Yes, the Gemara, really? That was the kinyan? The chikonami other may have it. So what? You made a kinyan. You made a kinyan chalibin. Kinyan devarim ma'al mahu. That's our sugya. Four words. Kinyan devarim ma'al mahu. The kinyan that you did was on words alone. What does that mean? So Mishnah explained, Kinyan Chalipin, it's a great Kinyan. Sukkim in Megillus Rus, most probably it's some kind of halacha Moshe Messina. There's a concept called the Kinyan Chalipin. Kinyan Chalipin is great. Pasuk says in Megillus Rus, the Zos, the Fanim B'Yisrael, Allah Gu'ula, V'Ala Tzmura, the Kayem, Kol Davar, Sholafish Nalav, the Zos, the Zos, the Tub Yisrael. I wanted to buy land, simply give you a piece of field. I give you a shoe, I give you a handkerchief, I give you a yarmulke, I give you a pen, I want to buy land from you, wonderful. I want to buy a car from you, an animal, phenomenal, great. I'm going to make the following kinyan chalipin with you. I'm hereby giving you this handkerchief, and I'm acquiring from you the following obligation that you're going to stand on your head. What do those words mean? It's not a chavtza, it's not an item. You're making a kinyan to do an action? That doesn't mean anything. That's not tofes. That's what's called a kinyan devarim. It's a kinyan on words. It's a kinyan to fulfill what you said. What's the teeth behind that? What's the engine that's driving that obligation to fulfill your words? So kinyan chalipin is not a word for that. That seems to be the first question. Wait a second. let's pinpoint, what did these two parties sell to one another? They sold the fact that they're going to go through the action of dividing up the chatzar. It's kidding hard. It's like making a kidding thing. You stand on your head. It doesn't mean anything. So the Gemara is going to work on this. That's going to be the next sugya. What the answer to that question is. This sugya is what the question was. What are the parameters of that question? Clearly, the Gemara is putting the limitations, putting the brakes on kiddush halevim. Kiddush halevim is not as good as we thought it was. We thought it was l'chaim kol davar. And now the Gemara is saying, no, not kol davar, rov davar. Chafatzim, karpim, metaflim, cars, animals, that kind of stuff. But to go through the motions of doing something, that's mamash en hakidding dvarim v'lo b'zeh. So it's with this background that the Rishonim are bothered with the following problem. It's a problem that exists ad hayom hazeh. We're going to skip down a couple of Ramakamas, hopefully we can come back to them a little bit later. But let's skip down to the fifth of Ramakamas for a moment. It's a Mishnah Maseches Ksumos. Afa pisha amru besula govim masayim amon amona, imratza lahosefila me'amona yosef. The halacha says that anytime a person gets married, he has an obligation to have a ksuba. Ksuba means that if and when the marriage will be broken up for one of two reasons, either because the husband dies or because the husband divorces her, so then he is going to have to reimburse, have to pay her the mamon that it says in the ksuba. How much money does it say in the ksuba? So here the Mishnayos tell us, it depends whether this woman's getting married for the first time or not. If she's a basula, then she gets 200 zuz. If she's an amon or a grusha for other reason, so then she only gets half of that. She gets one mamon. She gets 100 zuz rather than 200 zuz. Where did all this come from? This whole idea of writing a ksuba? So that's the big machlokes, the Gemara itself. There's one Tana that says that ksuba deraisa, that the source for writing a ksuba is actually a din min haTorah. It's an obligation min haTorah. We state in the Torah after writing ksuba. The Torah doesn't say it directly. It says it a little bit roundabout. The Torah says kesev yishkol kibor habasulos. The Torah says in Pesach Mishpatim that if a person starts up with a young girl, a 12-year-old girl, so there are two parshas. There's a parsha of Ba'anes, the parsha of Mefater. Either he forcibly attacks her, or he seduces her, convinces her to be mezana with him. So then he has to pay X amount of money. How much money does he have to pay? The Torah says kemor habesulos, the amount of money that's usually given as money when you marry a besula. How much is that? So it happens to be 50 shkalim. The Torah says benasal chamishim kesef, you have 50 shkalim. A shekel is the equivalent of four zuzim, for dinu mezuzim or synonymous. So if the Torah says 50 shekel, you do the math, 50 times 4, it comes out to 200 zuz. So come some time and say, kesef yishkel kumar ha-basulos, you see that the Torah is requiring you to give money when you marry a basula. So that makes sense. You just attacked this girl, you caused her no longer to be a basula, so you have to pay for that. Kesef yishkel kumar ha-basulos, she would have been entitled to this great amount of money, to this basula money, to this tuba money, you took that away from her, you're like a mazik, kesef yishkel kumar ha-basulos. So you see, indirectly, that there is such a parasha, such a sugi of ksuba ben ha-Torah. That's one opinion in the Gemara. And the other opinion says, no, ksuba is only the Rabbanan. The Torah says it. The Torah doesn't say you have to give a ksuba. The Torah describes what the norm was. It was the normal practice in the days of Torah. If people would get married, they would promise the girl 50 shekel, 200 zuz. So the Torah says, if you are ma'anis and mafatar, you have to pay kibara basulos because that you caused that loss of what would otherwise have been coming to her. It doesn't mean that according to the Torah standards it would have been coming to her. It just means that was a noksha ilam. What are the Torah standards? You live in Tinek and Tufshin Pei Beis and you want to get married. You want to give a ksuba, good. You don't want to give a ksuba, also good. Whatever you want, there's no chiyuv to write a ksuba. But the Mishnah say you have to write a ksuba. You want to say if you don't have a ksuba, a couple can't be together. That's all midirabana. That's according to one opinion, that's all midirabana. So this is a running machlekes. It was a machlekes atanoim, a machlekes amaroim, a machlekes avishayim. It's a machlekes ad ayyam azeh. Is this basic din of ksuba, din deraisa, din derabana? It's a machlekes in the Ashkenaz with the Sfaradim until this very day. If you pay careful attention next time you're at a wedding, so when they read the ksuba, they'll say, kesev zuzit mason, he's promising other 200 zuz, the chazi lechi, what's the next word? Midda araisa. Ashkenazi ksubas have that word in midda araisa. Sephardic ksubas do not have that word. Sephardic ksubas right, kesev zuzit mason, the chazi lechi, that's due to you, it's coming to you. How is it coming to you? Maybe the araisa, that's not the araisa. So Ashkenazi, we go out and live with, we have the courage rewriting that word deraisa. We're machriya, that is deraisa. And this father said, no, we don't know what the din is. So therefore, the chazi leichi, period, you fill in the blank, whatever you think it is. I don't literally fill in the blank, but conceptually fill in the blank. Some of the Rishonim were bothered that Ashkenazim were a little bit too gutsy. We're writing the chazi leichi with deraisa. Half the Rishonim say it's not even true. So why don't we write the chazi leichi with deraisa? Why don't we write like this father? Why don't we just write the chazi leichi? It's so much safer, so much cleaner. Why get involved in the shayla? So the Rosh, the beginning of Ksuba, suggests that the reason why our custom is to write midaraisa is for a different reason altogether. The Gemara tells us that there were actually two different sets of currencies in the days of Chazal. That were the same coins, but they're worth different amounts. So you had zuzim, we didn't want to say. You had shkalim, you had slaim, you had all kind of different coins, but they meant very, very different amounts in terms of silver. There was a currency that was called kesef tsuri. There was a currency called kesef medina. Yeah, I guess like the equivalent would be. I mean, it's not a perfect equivalent. You have American dollars and Canadian dollars. You have, they were both called dollars, but they're worth different amounts. The only problem was here was in the same place. So you had two different currencies, two different systems in place. So the kesef tsuri was what was worth much, much more. It was eight times the amount of silver in a tsuri coin than in its parallel of a medina coin. So the Gemara tells us that whenever there's a chiyuv min ha-Torah to pay, so the Torah was given in the higher currency. The dini ha-Torah was determined based on silver according to the higher rate. Whenever there's a chiyuv on a medina, but in the base of Chazal instituted according to the lower rate. The sugi is have a comment about that. So comes the Rashi Ksubas and says, when you pay the Ksuba, you pay the higher rate. The Chazi Lechem and the Reis, you pay the Reis at the standards, even if Ksuba itself is on a Midrabanan. So it could be there was a special Tekanas HaChavim to give the higher amount, even though, again, the Ika Ksuba itself is the Reis. So it's unclear what the magic word of the Ksuba is. According to the Sfarim, it's nothing, it's just the Rabbanan, and leave it out. And the Sfarim, until this very day, they don't have that word, anything, they just the Chazi Lechem, period. Ashkenazi Ksubas, put in that word with the raisa, which either means we pass it the chiyuv with the raisa, or it means that the payment method, the currency is going to be the raisa. But this is all talking about what's called the ikar ksuba. This is the main part of the ksuba. This is not negotiable. Every couple pays, again, the husband pays either if it was a psula 200, if it was a managusha 100. And then the Mishnah tells us that afal b'shamru, even though that's the bare minimum, imratu l'haysif, fail b'manam haysif, you want to add on more? That's what's called Tosefes Ksuba. Nobody told you to do it, but if you want to do it, then you do it. So we hear also Ashkenazim and Sfarim part ways on this. Everybody does Tosefes Ksuba today. You don't have to. Nobody asks you to. It's a nice thing to do. It's a nice gesture to show your wife to be that, oh, you know, I'm not just obligating myself to do the bare minimum. I'm going to go above and beyond the call of duty. Hopefully that sets the tone for the marriage. He's that the cheeriest tone. He's saying that if and when he dies and divorces, so you can get a lot more money than you're entitled to. So everybody agrees you don't have to. Lamais, everybody adds on. How do you add on? How do you chesh binat? How do you add on? So here also, there were two different customs in Klai Yisrael. So the Ashkenazim decided to have a flat rate. Means, everyone's doing the same thing. We don't want to start to sit down with the chassan, but the chassan, they say, so would you like to add on 10,000, maybe 5,000? The big knacker, the guy doesn't have a penny to his name. So he turned to his dad, said, how much are we putting on the dotted line over here? So, you know, to make life easy for everybody, we write a standard number. What's the standard number? Meir Zekukim Kesef Tzoruf. 100 Zekukim coins of pure silver. Zekukim, coins back in the Middle Ages, back from Germany. Go dig up and go do some excavations in Germany from the 1400s to find this Meir Zekukim Kesef Tzoruf. So that was the standard practice. X amount of money. At the end of the day, even if the end of getting divorced, no one's going to sit down and count the Kesef Tzoruf. They're going to come up with some other kind of a settlement, whatever it is. But in theory, that's what it says. Meir Zekukim Kesef Tzoruf. But the Sfardim, first of all, the Sfardim, I'm not going to write German coins, the German coins up. So they write that. They write different numbers. The different Sfardi communities have different practices. So they write, if you ever, next time you go to a Sfardi wedding, you have to make sure it's Sfardi time the chassan. If the kal is Sfardi, you're not going to hear this, but the chassan is Sfardi, and they're actually writing the Sfardi ksuba, if you pay careful attention, you probably hear the numbers in dollars. I mean, they'll say that he was mishavid upon himself to pay another $10,000, whatever it is. So they'll write the American dollars to make it clear exactly what it is. So they go case by case, different amounts. So comes the mission, says, that's fine. A few may have money with Yosef. You can add on as much as you want. That's perfectly fine. So comes Tosus in the sixth of the Mamakomos. And the very first three words of the parak, the name of the parak is Afal Pi. It's a strange name for a parak, Afal Pi. So comes Tosus in the very first words, Afal Pi, Imratza Losif, Afil Me'am Manu, also sixth of the Mamakomos, Tema. The Akshav Nagu, Shekosif, Chosel Akala, Me'a Litrin. Says, we have a custom, right? 100 Litrin, 100 coins. Afal Pi, She'ain Lo Shem Pruta. He says, the Chosel doesn't have a half a Pruta to his name. Chazan's a kid. He's 15 years old. He's 18 years old, sitting learning a car. He doesn't have a penny to his name. And he's writing these absorbent amount of money. Where did this come from? So comes Tosas not bothered with how's he going to pay later. Tosas bothered. How does this work? How does the shiva get off the ground? Based on what is he mishamed himself to pay this X amount of money? So it's unclear from Tosas what precisely was bothering them. What was their nekudas ha'sheil over here that somehow, if the guy has money, they're okay with that. If the guy has no money, then they're not okay. What exactly is going on? Later, the Shaman, the first year, elaborated upon Tosas and say, what Tosas had their eyes on the following ball. They were really looking at Asugin Babasar. They were looking at the notion that a kinyan chalipin, which is the mechanism of obligation that we use for this Tosefus Tuba, I mean, the Chosin says to the Kala, if and when he dies of divorce, I'm going to give you an extra $10,000. He gave his word. He promised her. What does that mean? Obviously, there was a kinyan that was made. Obviously, he obligated himself to the mechanism, which is exactly what we do under the chuppah. And not under the chuppah, literally, we do by the chasen stish. If you remember by the chasen stish, so at some point, the Mitzvah Kedushin comes over to the chasen, pulls out a handkerchief, pulls out a pen, pulls out a, takes some yarmulke or something, and he says to the chasen, I am hereby making a maisa kinyan on behalf of your kala. Kala's not doing it. I can do it on her behalf. So I'm doing a maisa kinyan on behalf of your kala, and I'm hereby acquiring from her the obligation from you to pay X, Y, and Z. So one of the X, Y, and Z's is the Tosefes Ksuba. That was done in the days of Rishon Moso, days of Balei Taisus. I don't know whether the Masada Kiddush would do it, whether somebody else would do it. He was Mishabed, the husband-to-be is Mishabed himself through the mechanism of a Kinyan to pay X amount of money as a Tosefes Ksuba. So Tosefes says, wait, let's work this through, says Tosefes. If the chassid happens to be very, very wealthy right now, and he owns a lot of property right now, so then I understand how that works. Why? Because I'm acquiring from you what's called the shibud nechassid. Tosas doesn't spell this out, but this is clearly behind the scenes of Tosas. If and when the chassid owns property, so then I could sell property to a kiddush chalipin. The same way I can sell property to a kiddush chalipin, I can be mishabed property to a kiddush chalipin. Shibud means is a lien on my property. Shibud is what the Rishon coined the phrase, Ritvorites and Kiddush, the kinyan b'miktsas. It's a partial kinyan. Let's say, for example, I borrow $1,000 from you. And you now have a lien against me. You have a claim against me. You own a shtick of my land, up to $1,000 worth of my land. You're a bailiff to a certain extent in that land. True positive. If I sell that land off to somebody else, you have first dibs at the land. You can come and collect that land from the enemy, from the other guy, because I sold something I didn't really own. So a shibud is a partial kinyan. So says Tosfos in between the lines, I understand if the chosin is very wealthy, he's got loads and loads of karka, so then when he obligates himself to pay this Tosefes Ksuba, so the kala acquires a shtick of his land, the part of his land, to the amount of the $10,000 that he promised to give her, and I understand how that obligation came into effect. It comes into effect through the mechanism of a kinyan chalipin, which works on a chefza. Calls by this chefza there. But there's no chefza here. There's no shibud nechassim, because the guy doesn't have any nechassim. The guy doesn't own anything. His father, he doesn't own a penny. So what's the shibud nechassim? Absolutely. So that's a different parasha of Torah called Tchiras Polim. Tchiras Polim means when I enter into a verbal agreement with somebody and they do something for me as a service and I agree to give them X amount of money, that's a new Tchiras Polim.
In a nice form and transfer the thought process, the agreement to create a relationship, this Kenyan relationship, we use Kenyan and institution, it is this mechanism that obligates him to, you know, be able to transfer money because there was a Kenyan involved, the whole relationship with institutions.
No, but the relationship, again, there's a Kinyan Kiddushin, so the Kiddushin itself, whatever that means in the Nemamonos, there is a Kinyan Kiddushin, but this is not that. This is an obligation that actually has nothing to do with the marriage itself. this obligation is not going to start until after he dies or after he divorces her. This is an agreement that he's entering into again. The Ika Ksuba is not his choice. Either the Torah of the Chumah or Pesach in it. But the Tosefet Ksuba is an added relation, an added agreement. It's nothing to do with the marriage. For Karen, it's after the marriage is over. If and when he dies, if and when he divorces her, he's obligating himself to X amount of money. So how do you do that? That's exactly what Tosefet's question is. If I say to you, I want to obligate myself to pay X amount of money. If I have the chasim, then I can understand that. Well, like a kinyan shiba, a kinyan chalipa, a shiba, a chasim, and shay. But if I don't have any chasim, so what is the teeth of what I'm saying? So we're making a kinyan to do what? So that's exactly what the Rishonim explained. What you're doing is you're making a kinyan to promise, in a sense, to go to the bank, to take out $10,000 in 50 years from now, and to give it to you. Wait a second, what's that? You're making a kinyan to do an action. You're not making a kinyan on a cheftza. That smacks of that problem. That's exactly what a kinyan devarim is. That's exactly what the Gemara said about Basra Dav Gimel. You can't make a kinyan. There is no mechanism in halacha to say, I'm making a kinyan to divide my courtyard. That's worthless. Reuben's making a kinyan to go to the bank and in the 50 years from now and to pay his ex-wife. What do those words mean? So Schirr's problem is a different story of the Gemara. So comes Tosus and says, how does it work? He doesn't have any property. So Tosus doesn't answer the question yet. Tosus is going to answer the question. We're going to probably have to wait till next week for the answer. But Tosus starts to fine-tune the question a little bit, almost like tone down the question a little bit. But Tosus says, the Bishlama, I understand. Kishi Heishlo, if he has property, Mishabe Nechasel Zahachov. So then I understand how the Kinyan works. That's not a kinyan devarim. That's the kinyan on the cheftza of property. But then Tosfos starts to get a little bit shaky. For Hovin is chayev, if he will never do Eilah Nechasim, for Kol Acherim, he stabbed him. So Tosfos says, wait a second. It sounds like we're only posing our challenge, only creating a question because the fellow doesn't own property. Sounds like we would be okay if he owned property. Well, first of all, if he owns property today, who says that's going to be the same property in 50 years from now? Who says what he owns now is enough to pay the $10,000? So Tosfos says, we're only bothered with the kasha, only his challenge when there's nothing at all. He owns, he's a penniless guy. Then we ask you the kasha. If he owns any amount of property, then we would never ask the kasha. So now Tosfos posed the question on the supposed non-question. What does that mean? Even if he owns a little bit, or even if he owns a lot, but if that's not the property that we're going to talk about in payment day in 20 years from now, so how does that solve any of the problems? So comes Tosfos and says, we need a little bit of an intro about Shibudim and about Kinyanim and about Chayvis and Nildes. We need actually a big intro, says Tosfos. So hopefully it's next week. We'll pick up on this point to try to understand. We understand Tosfos Kasha. We understand, we thought we understood why Tosfos didn't ask a Kasha, and then we're re-questioning and saying, wait a second, even when they didn't ask a Kasha, they should have asked a Kasha. We'll get to Shem next year, we'll try to fine-tune a little bit the point system. Okay.